Hello and welcome to the New 52 Review, episode 18. I'm here with one Eric Shea. How are you
doing, right, Eric?
Eric Shea. Now, this is a horror type book. Is there a possibility that we will hear from the Attic Animal? Is that a possibility,
Eric? There is a possibility we might hear from the Attic Animal. It's not really up to me, but it's a good possibility.
Not the Cellar Dweller, though. Do you think the Cellar Dweller?
Dweller's dwelling in cellar right now.
He's dwelling in cellars. But this is a book that is one of the horror books, one of the dark line of books in the New 52.
I don't know. That's the thing is, I don't consider it a dark, like a part of the dark.
Well, before we continue that, it is Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, Volume 1, War of Monsters. I think I do say it is a horror. Or more, I mean, obviously, the Creature Commandos, a redone version of them is kind of in this. But I do think this is a monster book, though. So it depends on whether you, to me, say that it's books would be a horror.
When the New 52 put out all their little individual titles, like The Edge and freaking, you know, the Batman
the
film
dark
with
and
Superman,
the
and they had The Dark, you know, I don't think this was a part of it.
I don't know what it would have been a part of then. We'd
the
have to check
edge.
That. Well, it might be The Edge. But to me, what
the
really spells it out...
relegated to Wildstorm stuff.
Yeah, that was more Wildstorm stuff. I really do think that this was one of the dark, but we'd have to check. But
I don't know what else it would fit in.
Like,
I agree. I'm saying, I just don't know. Like, it doesn't have that feel to me like the rest of like the Justice League.
Oh,
dark,
I know what you're saying.
Constantine's and the freaking all the.
It's
other
more
ones.
Of an action. It is more of an action book than really a horror book. But it is written by Jeff Lemire, art by Alberto Ponticelli. And speaking to you before we did this, not a big fan of the art. I like it a lot, and that's the art to me is what kind of pushes it towards one of those monster or horror books. You know. The stuff that you and Reggie like, especially Reggie. Reggie likes
in my
really
mind,
likes
like,
that
horror
stuff.
Monster books does not have to equate for like equal like shitty art.
No, I don't think it. To me, I don't think it's that shitty. I think it goes very well with like the Animal Man book that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast series.
I think it goes with that. Had way better art. Than
yeah, I like this art. I think it fits the story. I don't. There may be some times where it's a little more confusing than it needs to be. But I actually love the covers,
especially as we go along.
Oh yeah,
they become the more painted,
the covers
stylized
are
covers. I think
great.
They look amazing.
But yeah, I like the art. I read it again, and I hadn't read it for a while. I read it way back when we started our site, and I tried to turn you on to it, and you had read it, and now we're rereading it for this, and you had already told me that you really didn't like the art, and I went in, maybe it's because I expected it to be really bad, like I'm like, oh, maybe I forgot about shit.
Like you're going
and
in with new
in.
Eyes, now
yeah,
that I've been
yeah,
in the comic
now,
game for a couple years, I'm going to go back to what I once loved, I'm going to find out it's nonsense.
Yeah, and I actually like the art. It's weird, I think that if you would have asked me when I first started reading this, and this was one of the first two books I read, of DC Comics, of the New 52, and any kind of book, that I would have told you that I probably at that point was, I thought the art was okay, but I really, really liked the story. I'm kind of flip-flopping now. Now going back reading it after all of my learned times as a comic book reviewer, Eric, as a critic, going back, the story is very rushed, I thought, and just kind of nothing is really explained, which actually upsets me. Though I'm not saying I didn't like this. I still did enjoy it. You'll hear, obviously, the score by the end. We'll get into it. We'll get into it. I don't want to speak out of class.
I am happy that this is coming out when it is because, like you said, it's not. I don't know if it can be called a dark book, but it is a monster book, and I think it fits
like
Halloween well at this time. Exactly.
Yeah, it does. It fits well with Halloween. And before we do continue, if you would like to know about it, everybody listening, we do have a Patreon account, and I mentioned that. It is patreon.com/weirdscience, and I mentioned that because if you enjoy hearing our New 52 review podcast, one of the bonuses of being a Patreon subscriber is getting these episodes 2 weeks, if not more, ahead of time. There's been times where we're dropping some a little bit even ahead of that 2 weeks. So if you'd like to support
us
for this.
There are sometimes when we're really on the ball.
Yes, if you want to support us for this and get the episodes earlier than just the general public, then come and subscribe to our Patreon account. And that is at the $5 level. You also get on that level the extra bonus Patreon-only spotlight each week and some other stuff. We have a lot of other free shows even on there, including the Cellar Dweller, as we mentioned earlier. But again, I told you, this is Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, Volume 1, War of Monsters, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Alberto Ponticelli. The first issue came out September 14th, 2011, and this trade, which is issues 1 to 7, was collected and released on June 20th, 2012. And this is what DC has to say about this Volume 1. It's an all-out war as Frankenstein has new field team, the Creature Commandos, uncover an age-old conspiracy at the heart of Bone Lake. That's all they say, Eric.
That's
really
all they say.
Yep, the Bone Lake story, which actually is what we're going to start off with, obviously, because that's the first four issues. There's a lot more going on, including like a one-shot going on, but
and
also...
the weird thing is, it's so like the one-shot we have in issue number five, I guess.
Yeah, it
is. That really is not exactly a one-shot. Yes, we have a guest star in it, but it really sets up the next arc, and like, well, I think, because it's like a side project, but that's way more interesting than Monster Planet.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it, the seeds are set in this first four issues as well. Where they kind of tell us, you know, a mystery that's going to come up. But it does start at Bone Lake, Washington. And it's funny because it says there, population 4,500. It's about to go down. It's about to go down. And you see a grandfather and his grandson.
Do you see somebody in this issue who goes by with a freaking red marker and just X's that?
That's what I wanted. I actually really thought that that would be funny as they just keep going. And really,
like Frank,
in
like
this town.
Commandos come in and freaking starts knocking it off.
From what we find out, later on, I'm really shocked they even show that population because that population is going to continue to go down. But you see a grandfather and his grandson, and they are fishing. They're fishing on Bone Lake. If I was a part of this town and knew what was going on, I would not be fishing at Bone Lake.
No,
I wouldn't go near it. I would not go near it.
That is such a plot hole in my mind because how ominous you find out Bone Lake, the town, is.
Yep.
You stay the fuck away from this lake.
You stay away.
Unless it's sacrifice season.
Yeah, and the worst thing about this is as they're doing this, they have a dog. The dog hears something and goes off. The grandfather then goes off to see what's wrong with the dog. Because the dog like, rah, rah, you know what's going on. The dogs go like this, rah, rah, rah. Like that?
Yeah,
is that what he went to? But he yells, and the kid's like, "Grandpa, what's going on with what's going on with Eli?" And then, that dog, he's got a mind of its own. And then he doesn't have a mind because he's been skinned alive. And the grandfather goes, and it's this monstrosity. Again, it reminds me a little of
Jesus.
It reminds me a little of the Animal Man, kind of the shit that was going on in that later on. But, he says, the grandfather says, "Oh, sweet Jesus," and then says, "Oh no, it's finally happening, isn't it? That only means to me that he knows what the hell is going on near this Bone Lake. Don't go near Bone Lake."
Well,
this should have been something
too,
where
we read this years ago, but going back into this for this little podcast here, I forgot all about all the story until we get to Rot World. I forgot everything we dealt with until that point. So when I'm reading this, I'm like, it's finally happening, isn't it? I'm like, how the fuck do you know that a goddamn monster would come out of the woods and skin you alive?
And you're like, what? What's going on?
But I just thought it was really weird to begin with.
Why is he fishing at this lake? I wouldn't go near this lake if I was him. But we go off then, and we are introduced then to the Shade the Shade Ant Farm, it's called, which is a little ball. It's actually Shrunken Technology from Ray Palmer, which is a really cool call out. And at this point, DC.
We got a Ray back in the day.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. DC didn't have any plans for Ray Palmer really going forward into the New 52, so he did show up in this book as a member of Shade and using his technology, his shrinking technology, to make this ball that flies around, this little teeny ball that
accessing file, blah, 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 the Ant Farm, a mobile 3-inch indestructible globe that is Shade's new HQ.
Yes.
And it's funny because the way we get all this information given to us in it, it's a little tedious when you first start out.
It
kind of stays tedious, honestly. That's what it goes, but it's shade.net, and you access this online thing that gives you information. It really reminds me of the Starship Troopers movie.
Exactly what I was going to say. Do you want to know more? Also, it kind of is. It's a combination, and that's the first thing I thought of. It's Starship Troopers combined with the Green Lantern Ring, because they want to know what's going on, it tells them. But because it's so in depth of what they say, it does remind me of Starship Troopers, and I think maybe they were even playing. Jeff Lemire was playing on that.
I would think so.
From the very beginning, there is a misprint, Eric, that ended up not only in the individual issues, but I believe in the volume itself. Now, I'm only reading it as individual issues, but it is flying over Manhattan. There is no way it's 2,000 miles above Manhattan. Space starts at 62 miles.
I believe
that this is supposed to say 2,000 feet, 2,000, you know, yard. I don't know what, but miles is too much. It would be in deep space. And so there, Eric, I've just proven that I am a smart cookie.
You are.
But yeah, what happens then? Indeed. Yes, and what happens then is Frankenstein teleports, and they spell it out, to get into the Shade headquarters. First off, you have to have access. Then you teleport and shrink at the same time to get in there.
Teleportation's not hairy enough. The shrinking aspect is terrifying the shit out of me as well.
And you're flying around in pretty much a phantasm ball flying around the world. But it is a pretty cool deal. It gives the Shade team in this book the opportunity to go wherever they want and fly around and stuff like that. But when they go in, Frankenstein is greeted by these hominids that are kind of androids. And he starts with this nonsense about how...
Humanids.
Yeah, humanids. And basically, he wants to go see. He's there to see Father Time. But he does start with like, I knew a man who played God once. And he does say it. Now, me and you, this was a big joke for us when we did read this originally. And he doesn't say it as much as I remember, but he still says it a couple times. And it makes me laugh.
I just think it's just for the amount of times that we say it to ourselves, we thought the book was riddled with phrases like that.
But he does say this a lot. Even when he'd show up later out of this book, he does say that. And Melmus Beard, you know, those are the two. Yeah, those are the two catchphrases that he has. But he does mention in this, like, oh, these humanids, you know, you can't play God with these things. And, you know, and that kind of comes into play later. It is set up for later.
Because these things, when we have the freaking Shade.net little query going on, it's like, humanids, artificial humanoids created out of synthetic organic matter, mass-produced in Shade City to act as its caretakers and also to perform various menial tasks. Current humanid population... 8,576 fucking humanoids walking around the city. Now, that's one of the things, too. While we have this HQ that is 3 inches, like, you know, round, we have a whole city inside.
Yeah, it's a whole city.
On top of everything else that we deal with. So there you need a lot of these humanoids, these artificial intelligence.
Yeah, they're doing the work.
Deal with everything throughout, because for the most part, we have a few psychics hooked up to freaking, you know, mainframe computers and whatnot, but we have Dr. Belroy, we have Ray Palmer, and we have Father Time. Those seem to be the only real people that
in
this whole Shade HQ.
Later on, when we meet the Creature Commandos, Dr. Mazursky says that she actually has the zoo in there as well. But that's the funny part, too,
because the zoo is an even tinier shrunken prison to make sure that nobody could ever escape.
Yeah, it's a prison of these, you know, failed experiments that are in there. But you have Frankenstein. He needs to talk to Father Time, who's head of the department. And when he goes to see her, she is a little pretty much Asian schoolgirl with a hit girl type, with the domino mask and things like that. And Frankenstein's just like, what the hell? What's going on? And Father Time explains that, listen, every decade I randomly generate a new body that acts as my host. The old one was past due. Is there going to be a problem? And this is where pretty much we have Father Time from now on, is this little girl, including in the which one is it? The Wonder Woman one shot, the Batman Dark Knights one for Metal. What is that one called?
Merciless. Yes,
the Merciless. Yes, and the Merciless actually has Father Time in this outfit. So if anybody has read that,
your body's going to regenerate. Maybe it's like a freaking Doctor Who bit where you don't know what you're going to get until you get it. But does it mean you have to wear like a little schoolgirl like Japanese like outfit?
I get the idea. That's the full deal. You have to go full out. It is funny. Too. That's how he is, and he's wearing that. But they talk about what happened at Bone Lake. There is something wrong at Bone Lake. And what happened is Lady Frankenstein ended up going to find out what was going on there and disappeared. She was attacked by all these monsters.
Back in early from his vacation to go find out what happened to his ex-wife.
Yeah, and there's just it is Monster Town. It's just being overrun. It is kind of like the Monster Men type of deal where the whole city's being overrun. Frankenstein quickly is introduced to his new team, the Creature Commandos. shows, and you have Dr. Nina Mazursky, who is a, it even says, she's basically a mermaid, a hybrid via cutting-edge eugenics. She actually is an amphibian humanoid that actually did this to herself. She also made most of these other guys.
The creature commanders, the way they're presented here, really comes off like the BPRD from Hellboy.
Yeah, it does. Shit like it that. Really because does.
Even like, you know, Nina fucking, I always forget her last name, Mazursky.
Mazursky,
she comes
yes.
off very Abe Sapien-like.
Yep, Abe Sapien, is exactly. And you have Warren Griffith, who is a werewolf. You have Vincent Velcoro, who's basically, yeah, he's the wolfman. And Vincent Velcoro is a pretty much a vampire who
he's a modified
with the
Langstrom serum. But
yep.
yes, he's essentially a vampire.
And like I said, these two, Warren and Vincent, they were made by Nina. Nina actually made them kind of in a, almost in honor of Frankenstein. She even says that her research was, and they all love Frankenstein. And then you have Callus, who is actually real. And he was not made. He's a mummy. He's a mummy. And they don't know anything about him. Everything about
that,
him
too, because
is unknown.
Because when we get the little freaking Shade.net rundown of all these characters, when you get to Callus, it's like, real name unknown. You know, origin unknown. Everything about him unknown. Even Father Time later in the series, like, what's up with this Callus here? That's classified, friend.
That's classified. They don't really know what's going on with him. And he's listed as the mummy and a medic. So we'll have to see how that's going
that's the
on.
Best, dude. Just he's a mummy and he's a medic. It's just because he comes with his own freaking wrappings.
I think so. If you cut yourself, he can use the wrappings. But yeah, Frankenstein, it's very 80s kind of action movie deals. I don't need a partner. But yeah. He's kind of stuck with them, and he has to go off. But they head off to the Bone Lake and the city around it. They go to find out what's going on.
I always just consider the town itself as
I guess it's Bone Lake. Yeah. It's just weird. When I went to say it, it didn't seem right. But basically, they head there. They open up the doors of the ship, and they are in full-out attack mode with just tons of monsters. And they say there's thousands of them. They just are there. They're trying to get survivors, and they're trying to figure out where Frankenstein's the bride went. And they're looking, and through this, they keep just saying, like, there's nobody alive. That all these creature commanders are like, there's no way. And you have Warren and Vincent are kind of like the comic relief. They're always together. And it's
kind of thing. They're always bickering. They're always together. And it's like these are almost like even though we have the mermaid and like they're all kind of rookie agents, you know.
Yeah, they
Vincent
are.
And Griffith, they really just come off more rookie where, you know, Vincent doesn't care about the whole authority of it.
No.
And Griffith is just there. He's a volunteer because he wants to be the best soldier he can be. So you know, they're playing off each other in this whole, you know, like vice versa kind of thing.
And
like
they go back and forth throughout this.
Like ego's going.
And it's a werewolf and a vampire.
Yeah.
So it's funny that way. It's like Gimli and Legolas in the Lord of the Rings. That's exactly what it seemed to me. And the funny thing about it is they're kind of made for this, so they are rookies. But they even have, like, Vincent even has, like, man, I didn't sign up for this, and stuff like this. Or, oh, man, we're always stuck with this. They're like, we've never been stuck with anything.
Mission.
This is our first mission. And it's kind of funny that way. But as this is going on, they're looking for survivors, like I said. And that's where Callus actually steps up and is like, no, you know what? There are many alive in here, and there's a church, a boarded up church.
He can hear their heartbeats.
Yeah, he can hear their heartbeats. And at this point, he actually has, like, a doctor's staff with him as he's walking. And I'll tell you, of all of the character designs, Callus, I think, is the best. I think he looks so goddamn cool. But I really like the designs in general them.
That's a weird thing to say. I really just don't like Vincent because he just looks like this, you know, kind of a generic vamp. It's not even a generic
he
vampire.
Is,
I just don't care for the design because he looks like, you know, a guy with a long
face. I like
face, a little bit like a why the long face with fangs and some bat wings sticking out the back. Griffith, just a regular wolfman looking guy. It's like Nina and Callus
like
are where it's at in my mind. Because the whole
Callus is the best to me.
I
think
whole,
he looks
like,
so cool.
Like the water suit that she has to wear. She goes around.
Yeah.
I really just like the idea of that.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, it's like Abe Sapien. They bust into this church. They find like a secret entrance with a bunch of stairs down, and that's where they find all the children from the town with this old lady, like a nun there.
This old religious crone.
Yeah, with like this old with a cross that she thinks that Frankenstein and the creature commandos. They think that they're these demons, and so we continue from there, and it's. this is where Frankenstein finds out, and we find out that this goddamn shit in this town is wrong, and you figure out right away, and Frankenstein really figures out right away.
I just wish we were given a time frame for how long this has all been going on, because the freaking the portal to, from Bone Lake, from like the monster planet where all these monsters come out, there's a portal at the lake that allows them to come through.
Yes.
And every now and again they do come through, and the town decided, I don't know, hundreds of years ago that
they said hundreds things, of years it's been going on.
I'm guessing like since it freaking was founded, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like they would sacrifice the child to keep it at bay, and I'm like, the fuck is wrong with you people?
Well, and that's they say it's been hundreds of years, and when they do explain that, they pretty much say, listen, when this portal opened originally and these monsters came out, these idiots, you know, they didn't know any better. I hate to say idiots, but they relied on religion and thought that it was some sort of religious thing, and they decided they had to sacrifice children. And it even says, much to the amusement of the creatures, because
they loved it. These fucking goddamn humans, they just keep giving us their babies. I don't know. Yep. Let's eat some babies.
But yeah, so there's nuns yelling.
This religious aspect, I'm like, what religion are you following when you think it's going to be, all right, look, we got demons coming up in our town.
I'm telling you, they were burning people at the stake. So you know, I'm telling you, it was that bad. Like, that point, they just never have decided against that, which is crazy.
Where is the voice of reason?
No, it's Frankenstein, because she's the nun's like, you know, I'll be cursed to hell's fire before I fail my ancient duties. And he's like, you mean? And it's a big jump. Like, when he says this, and he's like, you mean to tell me you have used these innocents as bartering chips and some ancient pact? And she's like, listen, we're all paid up. You know, hey, we sacrificed the kids this year. And
Jimmy
he's like,
John,
you know what?
Baby, went in last month.
Yeah.
What are you talking
he's
about?
Like, I can smell the years of deceit and deception on your breath. I'm thinking that the old lady just has bad breath, but he just slaps her. He slaps her across the face. And
all them old ladies got that. In my mind, I always called it meat breath, where it's a mixture of cigarette
it's
smoke
disgusting.
And coffee, and it just
comes and
out
she looks
and
so
like rotted meat.
Yeah, she just looks ancient. But yeah, he ends up going out, and they call for Ray and Father Time to come and grab the kids. You know, grab the kids, get them out of here.
It's
now we're going to go, and they're going to go to Bone Lake, and they do go in there. And then it basically ends up – there's a lot of this issue – or, you know, the volume of this ends up pretty much being just brawls. Like, everywhere you go, you're moving from one fight to the next.
As the thing is, we're moving from one fight just to get to the location. So every time we go from point A to point B, there's about six goddamn fights in between.
Yeah, to fight. So we do end up at Bone Lake, and as they go in, you do get a Dr. Mazursky's backstory. And basically, she was pregnant. She was going to have a kid. It didn't do well. The kid was sick, died, and then she ended up just separating from her husband and throwing her whole deal into shade, and through shade she ended up building new children, which are part of the creature commanders.
That's one of the
eventually
things, too, the original creature commanders that she built for, like, to build children that would not have the illnesses and the weaknesses that her dying baby had itself, so to make it so a child that would never be able to die.
Yep. And what happened is, when her first attempts kind of went awry, because these things kind of came to, got consciousness, and couldn't deal with the fact that they were alive, and had a, you know, it was one of those that everything hit them so hard they went insane. They could not be controlled.
The moral of the story is, don't build fucking monsters.
No, the moral of the story is, don't play God. I know
exactly.
A man who played God once, but basically it goes right back to that whole deal. So she ended up pretty much she didn't want to kill these creatures that went crazy. So she ended up having Ray Palmer make another, like you said, it's called the zoo, where they put these creatures in, shrunk them even more, and put them aside.
There. So if we got a 3-inch freaking, you know, if we have a 3-inch ball that's flying around the freaking city, inside that 3-inch ball, to the people who are normal in their minds, there's another 3-inch ball that's holding all the worst of the worst creatures in there.
Yeah, yeah. And then she
I can't do the math on that, but it's pretty goddamn small.
She ended up making Warren and Vincent, so you see them being made, and then she figured, you know what, if I'm going to make them and put them through this, the best thing I can do, it's very forced, but she made herself into
it's almost
a,
like, you know, if I could turn these people into these things, I had to show them
I'm gonna
I was
have
willing
to, show
to do
them.
It myself.
Yeah, so she did, and that's how she became this myrrh woman. And
the mermaid,
this is,
they call her.
Yeah, yeah, and as they're going down into the lake, they end up coming across just freaking centuries, it seems, of skulls. So
skulls.
And just bones and everything from all this. I mean, this is, the whole lake is littered with kids' bones, and it's bad. And that's where they say, you know, oh my God, look at this. This is going on. And that's where they were saying the carbon dating says the portal. They get to the portal. They find the portal through this. And they say that this portal's been open a long time, maybe hundreds of years. And right. that's when Father Time says, in other words, these backwoods yahoos have been dumping kids down this portal for generations. Like you said, I wish we would have known it was every month. I don't know. That I would have liked to know.
There was a lot of goddamn bones, though. And through this whole thing, when we get to the portal, we also find out that this monster world that's on the other side, like all these monsters have just been preparing for all these hundreds of years just for an invasion. So they like this whole time they'd come out every now and again for a little recon work, but
They're actually scouts. They're actually scouts, and what they do, they end up fighting another wave of these monsters and you see the portal and you see them coming out. They're fighting them, and Dr. Mazursky says to Frankenstein, listen, we need one of the brains. Frankenstein just reaches in and grabs it out of one of these creatures, hands it to her.
She just happens to have a goddamn little techno device that hooks into the brain. So
it's called Sombie. S-O-M-B-I-E. And yeah, it's Sombie. And it's Seer of Mental Brain Image Energy, Eric. They use that to scan the brain for them to find out that these were a scouting thing to find out if they should invade. And now it's time they're going to invade. They are going to. And it even says,
I'm telling you, for all this time, these monsters are showing back. Look, these rubes keep giving us our babies. I think we should have invaded a long time ago.
What it says. It even says, local villagers ascribe misplaced religious meaning to the portal. And this is the Shade computer telling them this. And the demons, a tradition of child sacrifices, became their norm to the amusement of the bloodthirsty creatures. So it'd be like me and you are planning to invade some place, and they just keep throwing whoppers at us. Yeah. We're still going to invade. We like those whoppers. And maybe it did. Maybe it did along the way. If we would have had a backstory of some of these guys, they were like, hey, do you think this planet's good to invade? These guys are eating these kids. Yeah, I think we got to wait a couple more years because they're just hungry. They want to keep eating. But now it seems that they have only one option, like Frankenstein. And then Frankenstein says, we have one option. We have to go and fight them. And that's kind of what they've decided. And the way they're going to go into this is what they call the egg, the monster mobile. That's an egg where they're going to get in this thing and they're going to be able to go through and teleport into this other world through this portal. And they'll be able to go. And they even spell out, and it's funny because they spell out this other world, which they, monster world, but they spell out that it's the Earth atmosphere. The atmosphere is equivalent to Earth, but the gravity is two times what they have. But that never comes to play.
No, ever. It's very odd. This whole monster world in general, once we find out about it and once we get there, it seems very weird because we have this portal that's open, but it seems like monster world is making its way to the portal.
And that's what they're saying.
But the thing is, these monsters have been coming for hundreds of years. How did they get from monster world to the portal?
Yeah, it is. There's a little bit of steps going, but they go through the portal in this, egg. And when they open it up, monster world is just infested with these monsters. And you see Frankenstein's ex-wife in the middle of them just fighting.
About
and she's like, hey,
about
time you got here. And you move on. But really, a lot of things from that part to when they do go to monster world are really kind of forced in and not really explained. Like you said, it ends up being that the planet is coming through, but even that is a little off.
Well, I'm telling you, that's the thing is, it seems like all this time the planet has been on the move going towards this portal.
Yes.
So if we're like, we're just minutes away now at this one point for the world to reach the portal.
Yeah, everything's coming to a head now.
How long has it been freaking, how far away was it, and how were these monsters
originally
getting
through
this world?
Yeah, but the weird thing is they do say the monsters were scouts, so I only can think in my mind that they have given the go, and that's why it's going through now. I do. I think it's been chilling. I think it's been chilling out,
and
now it's time to go.
Well, it is a sentient planet that's been taken over by these monsters that are parasites to it that are essentially controlling.
And that's where, again, it's kind of forced, because as they're going on, they're just fighting. Now we have a huge fight. You have Frankenstein and his ex-wife talking and, going back and forth. And if you had read even that Superman two-shot or whatever it was where you had Frankenstein as bride in that, it's pretty much standard things with them. Frankenstein really loves her and really will do anything to protect her. But she still respects him. You know what I mean?
She does not love him.
But at one point they even say later, man, he's crazy. And she's like, no, he's not crazy, and he is the best fighter there is, and things
and
like
then she,
that.
She recounts that, though, like, she brings takes that away later on because she sees what he does. Okay, he's crazy.
Yeah, and then she says that. But in the meantime, she also thinks Warren the Werewolf is sexy, and that kind of continues on. But it's very odd. Oh, it does, yes.
You know what? I would be okay if Lady Frankenstein thought I was sexy, too, because, yeah, she might be green. Yeah, she might have four arms.
She's hot.
And stitching over, she likes to walk around in leather goddamn freaking
arms. Oh, I think she's hot with her four arms.
Four arms.
But, yeah, now, that's one thing that I thought was a little off. I think that the art really doesn't give her enough credit from the other times that we see her. But they're fighting. It looks like they're going to die. I mean,
they are on a continent pretty much that is overrun with these spider monsters.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In my mind, there's no way they could survive. So
nope. You
really do have to come up with a way. And then when you have Kallus show some of like his real power, he freaking sticks the staff down in the ground and a shockwave emanates from it, killing all the spiders.
Shockwave of light, and it just kills everybody there, you know, besides them, all these monsters are just dead, and they don't even know what the hell happened, and because it really spends him, he can't do anything else, he just passes out then, and that's where Frankenstein's like, listen, Father Time, who the fuck is this guy, who's this Kallus guy, and he's like, nope, that's classified, and yeah, they go on, and they're trying to figure out what's going on with this, but as this goes on, they're figuring out more about this planet, and more about this portal, and things like that, and they see that the planet is heading towards the deal, it's sentient, this sort of thing, but the big thing is it starts to tremor where they are, and there's a mountain, and it's starting to have like an earthquake on this, and it ends up being that the mountain is like the mama or father spider
deal. Like, there's three continents of this monster world,
yes.
And each of the freaking continents has a shit ton of monsters, but it also has the big mama jamma of it, the Titan monster that, like, we on the one continent.
Now, and again,
we have the ogre monsters and we have the aquatic monsters.
And because this is the one thing that really, to me, was forced, because they don't know anything about this planet, but then they go through and just what they see right away then spells out the entire planet. And I did think that was forced.
It really plays out like a video game, too, the whole
thing.
All right, now you're in a new level.
Yeah.
And now you got to take
out the monster.
Yeah,
you have to fight through, and then you have to fight the boss.
Yeah,
and like you said, there's two continents and an underwater deal, and it's the spider continent, the ogre continent, and then the aquatic monster continent. But at this point, the spider one, you know, it goes to town. This thing comes out. It's huge. It's disgusting. And
it's like in freaking Starship Troopers when the big bug comes up from underneath the ground.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that back in the day when this first came out, I think that I really liked the scene. I can remember liking the scene. The problem is, it's a very cliched scene.
Oh,
in fact, we just saw it Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And what happens is this big spider, Frankenstein and his bride are fighting it. They're trying to shoot. They're not doing anything. And it just eats Frankenstein. And because it's his book and because of what's going on and because of, like I said, you've seen this in so many different ways that you know what's going to happen. And I'm like, I remember
there's
this.
There's no tension to this spider.
No, there's no tension whatsoever. And he cuts himself out.
You're waiting for him to reemerge. That's all you're doing.
And he reemerges with what looks like the heart and then just stabs it. I don't know why he stabs it after the fact, but he does, Eric.
You got it, Jim.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, it really, like you said it completely, you know, 100%. There was no tension whatsoever. You're just waiting for it to happen. But this is where they're like, okay, what's going on? There has to be these other things. Like, this is where they figure out that they are going to have to go to the ogre continent, and somebody's going to have to go underwater to fight these. At this point, Kallus is still knocked out. They put Kallus next to this egg ship, and then they break into two groups.
And
Frankenstein.
I really hope they put him in the egg ship, because when
I'm telling you, I think you see him just laying next to it.
I'm telling you, I think he is too, but when they were talking about it, because that's where it really comes off, I'm like, why don't you just put him inside, just in case.
Yeah, just in case something comes out. There might be one spider alive and would just come and eat him. But yeah, hopefully they do put him in. But yeah, they break into the groups where, like I said, you have Frankenstein and Dr. Mazursky in one, and then you have Warren, Vincent, and the bride in the other, and they're going to go after the ogre.
Because Frankenstein doesn't need to breathe, and freaking, you know, Dr. Mazursky, she is aquatic, so she can go underwater.
Yep.
So, like, it's a perfect match right there.
Yeah, and then at the very end, and this is the very end of this actual issue, all of a sudden the humanids start going crazy. And actually, they're the prophets.
The psychics.
Yeah, the psychics. And the weird thing is, there's a lot thrown out here that isn't really explained, but they have these psychics, and they start going nuts, and they're connected, and they have a link to the planet. They just start yelling, help me, help me, help me, and they're like, where's this message? Where is it from? And they're like, it's coming from the planet itself, and that's where we learn in the last part of this section, this first arc of this volume, is that the planet is in fact sentient, and it's being taken over by these parasitic monsters.
A long time ago,
yes.
I guess.
Yeah, they was taken over by these parasitic monsters. So now, not only are they trying to stop these monsters from coming through the portal into our world, they're also now trying to stop and save this planet from these sentient monsters.
Well, honestly, it's a freaking win-win situation. You take out all the monsters, and you don't have this planet go through the portal, destroying our own planet in the process.
To me, it just was like, it's almost like you have a cake with icing, and now you're just putting another layer of icing. It really wasn't that necessary. Yeah, really delicious. But you know what I mean? It really doesn't do anything more for the story. It just, I don't know. It makes the planet not be bad.
Exactly. For some reason, it gives us a reason for the planet to stop moving, for one thing.
And then moving off in the other direction.
Exactly.
Which, yeah, it's crazy.
Ridiculous goddamn time frame, because out of nowhere, all right, we got 3 minutes left until everything goes to shit.
It's,
I'm like,
crazy.
Really, 3 minutes, because your team is completely separated from other sides of this goddamn world.
Yeah, because, yeah,
3 minutes.
This is where we learn about the sentient planet stuff, and that's where you have Frankenstein and Dr. Mazursky go down into the water, and they're going to find these aquatic things. They end up fighting these about to fight.
And that's the best, too, because you have Lady Frankenstein, friggin' Vincent and Griffith. Yeah. They are fighting the freaking, like, their hearts out here. Like, they could be on the any instant. Frankenstein and freaking Mermaid, you know, Dr. Mazursky, they have no problem whatsoever, because the monsters down there.
It threw me off. Yeah. It threw me off because they go down and there's all of these aquatic monsters. They end up coming at them. Frankenstein thinks he's going to have to fight through what looks like 1,000 monsters.
There is a whole ocean full of monsters.
Oh, it's everyone.
It's one of these things that you have to have, because now that you don't have Kallus's magic fucking blast, you would not have these two characters.
No, you wouldn't be able to survive this, especially it's been spelled out already at this point. Dr. Mazursky's there. I don't know why they keep putting her in danger, because she says, I do not have any sort of combat training at all. So really, going down to this ocean, it ends up that Dr. Mazursky being there saves the day, but it really should have been her staying with Kallus and Frankenstein just going on alone, because he's the only one who's going to be able to fight if you had to fight. But these sea creatures end up looking at Dr. Mazursky and deciding that that's their mother. And it's a little forced.
Not only that, when the Titan shows up, the freaking big bad Titan of the ocean, he thinks that Dr. Mazursky is its mate.
And what happens is, it's such a lackluster freaking
everything
fight
is just put
here
on hold, because now, because you have nothing.
Yeah, and basically all you barely see anything, because all Frankenstein does is run his sword through this sea monster. The end of that. While you, like you said, the other three are just battling it out. They're desperately trying to win, and they're not going to. They're not going to be able to win. So back in Shade headquarters, you have Father Time and Ray Palmer kind of arguing, because Father Time wants to send in the toy box. Now, up until this point, they have also mentioned that they have a plan B. Plan B, if the creature commandos fail, a nuke is going through that portal and blowing up this planet. Also a reason why I think they make the planet a sentient planet.
That too, because they had also originally planned on this blowing up freaking Bone Lake.
Yeah, Bone Lake as well. But yeah, you have a sentient planet now. But when they said the toy box, I thought it was the nuke. I thought that they were sending a nuke through. Instead, it's these giant war wheels.
The war wheels, which are old school shit that are fun as hell.
Yeah, I like them. I like them a lot. War wheels and this freaking hominid, android
just a
army.
Off, though, because you had an android army that was freaking, you know, they came out through the toy box as well, which was it was a shrunken down deal. So when it went through the portal, it enlarged. So you see war wheels and a bunch of androids. I was really hoping that we get our creature commandos driving the war wheels.
Oh, it would have been cool.
Androids.
Yeah, because as you have this and the war wheels, they're just huge wheels with spikes that are just running over everything and crushing.
In
the meantime, you have the GI robot squadron there as well that kind of help out.
They're the GI zombie, and you only get to see them for a couple panels.
Yeah, you only see them for a little. And what the funny thing is that was where Ray was like, hey, these aren't tested. And Father Time's like, well, it's a good time to test it now.
I'm telling you, I want to weird one-shot story. You know, how many years later are we now? Fucking 6 years from when this came out. And I just want a weird one-shot where we see, you know, this planet goes off. The androids have gained sentience, and now
them and their pissed.
Are just on this monster world in this other dimension.
Freaking pissed. It's like a Planet Hulk. Now it's going to be World War GI Robot. And as they're doing this, like I said, Frankenstein destroys this big monster with his sword. That is a very, very interesting sword, well, but they really don't spell it out.
Not at all. They do one time later in this trade, but it's like they're just the Archangel Michael's sword, and they do not play that aspect up enough, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just all he's like, nobody yields to my sword, and then he goes with it. But yeah, the war wheels and everything take out the deal, and now you have the tension where they have pretty much saved everything, but they have 3 minutes to get off of this war, this monster world or this planet. Yeah, they're at opposite sides. So what happens is they pretty much, there's no way they're going to make it. Except that Kallus has woken up, gotten in the egg.
The egg has repaired itself.
Yeah. And the egg, because we didn't even mention that. At the point where they crashed in, the egg seemed to be done. But he gets in, he picks them all up, they crash back in the shade.
They say at the one point where the egg, it is a self-generating vehicle, but it would take time from that crash down to the monster planet. So it's one of those things where like, oh man, I hope this egg repairs itself before things go bad. And luckily it does.
Yeah, luckily it does. And then
the main characters die.
It smashes back into shade. They teleport back into shade. It crashes in, and then we get the ending of this whole section of you see Ray Palmer and Father Time watching the planet, the sentient planet that's now free of the demon spawn monsters that were parasitic to it.
The once monster
going away.
Planet is all happy, saying thank you through the psychics as it moves away from the portal.
Yeah, it says thank you, and that's where it goes off. And like I said, then the creature commandos bust in, they get out of the thing, and then you have them like, hey, and I think it's Father Time's like, hey, what do you got to say about your new team, huh? Pretty awesome, no? And just then Frankenstein's like, huh, they'll do. And
that
then
damn right
off.
They'll do.
Now, in this, in this whole deal, you also had this little tiny thing thrown in there that they had a signature. And his signature, we got it again. Like, oh no, I hope Frankenstein makes it back because he's the only one who can calm him down. And that's where it continues up in the next issue where you have
shit
O-Mac.
Never calms down at Shade. There's always something going on.
But yeah, it's going to be O-Mac, which would be the deal. But that is pretty much a good stopping point for the first half of the trade. So we're going to stop for a moment and then come back to finish it up. All right, we're back from that brief intermission. And we're going to go on with what ends up being pretty much a one-shot.
It's kind of a one-shot, but
it's
it does
a tie-in.
Set up the rest of this trade.
Yeah, it does set up the rest of the trade, but it is a tie-in
thing
as well.
Too, because if you open up this issue number 5 that we're starting with here, it's like, attention DC Nation, pick up O-Mac number 5 before you plunge into this issue for the other side of this battle. I'm like, man, they really saw the writing on the wall for O-Mac earlier. If they already have to have a freaking crossover with
I actually thought of that and possibly both books. I don't know. Because O-Mac especially. O-Mac didn't last.
Around.
Yeah, Frankenstein stuck around for 2 trades. Now, I will warn you, Eric, if we ever get to the second trade of Frankenstein, I believe it's 10 issues. So that will be quite a deal.
Finish everything up.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll ever get to that, but if we did, it's a big one. It's like that and Hawkman. Savage Hawkman, I think the second trade of that is like 12, 13 issues. It's nonsense.
Hawk,
but when I open this up, especially if you're reading it in trade, you open it up and you're like, see O-Mac number 5. Yeah, I'm not doing that. Plus, it
don't
says,
tell me how to live my
it's
life,
so funny DC. Because as we talk about this, it says like, okay, to plunge into the other side of the battle. And as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, okay, if this battle had something crazy or good, I would want to see the other side. I get the idea the other side of the battle was just as, you know, it, not that it was nonsensical, you know, what happens, but nothing really happens. But, like you said, it does set
up the remainder.
Well,
even getting into the whole battle, the whole idea is like, you know, read O-Mac number 5 before you plunge into this to get the other side. I'm like, but this issue starts, and it seems like it's right when they start fighting.
That's what I'm saying.
Goes after Kevin Coe.
Yeah, what it'd be funny is they just do the art from a different angle. It's what me and you both thought when they announced that they were going to have DVD technology. And I'm telling you, they really pushed that you'd be able to watch the movie and make your own director's cut with different angles and stuff. That didn't happen, Eric, and it may not have happened here as well, but you do start off, you have Frankenstein by himself at this point in Tibet taking down dwarves, alien dwarves, taking them down.
You think they're the same kind of dwarves we have in Hellblazer right now?
I don't know. They look very similar, but yeah, they're these little dwarves that are pretty much, you know, they're causing trouble in the serene Tibet.
They look like goblins to me.
Yeah, they're crazy, but, you know, Frankenstein takes them down, and then the monks come out and say, you know, hey, thanks a lot. And I actually like this little teeny bit because they're like, hey, you know what, Brother Frankenstein, you're always welcome among us. And I like the idea because Frankenstein is always like, even though he's a brute or whatever, he does have that cerebral side of him and also kind of the proper side.
I would really expect half the times we're introduced to Frankenstein, things start out where he is just meditating. So in my mind, he would fit in just fine.
That's why I like it. And I like it. And he actually does say, hey, you know what? I got some shit to take care of right now, but I may take you up on that later. And I would love to have that, you know, Frankenstein would go there and always be in Tibet, and then you call him. But he gets called by Checkmate.
Frank, all of a sudden, the next series comes out, Frankenstein, Tibetan Monk.
Agent of Tibet. But yeah, he ends up getting called by Checkmate and a little deal between Shade and Checkmate that they're going to need Frankenstein. And this was set up a little earlier in the trade where they got an idea of a metahuman signature that they've been tracking. It ends up being Omek. We find out pretty quick. But he ends up with Checkmate, which, again, has a cool base. They are actually in Mount Rushmore. That's always cool. But
and
it's one of those
first appearance, I'm pretty sure, in the New 52
Maxwell Lord.
Maxwell Lord.
Yeah, Maxwell Lord's there. And you get this idea. You have Father Time and Maxwell Lord who hate each other's guts. They're different organizations. They even say Checkmate is brought about by the UN and things like that. But it's almost like one of those you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type of thing. In the meantime, it's all a ruse. It's Father Time with a ruse where it looks like what Frankenstein has to do is go and subdue Omek when in fact it's really that Father Time is interested in the Brother Eye technology
and
the deal.
That's the thing. We send Frankenstein in and the freaking Brother Eye technology, like the satellite that is using its powers to you know, make Omek, it's going to go after the source. So it's going to come to us. It's pretty much a bait and switch where we have Frankenstein in and they come after friggin' the ant farm and we're sitting there ready for it because I want to know what this Brother Eye is.
Yeah, Father Time wants to know what the Brother Eye is. Now, in the meantime, I thought you don't get the idea that it's a trap. But I have to say that when basically they go over a city, they drop Frankenstein. They just shoot him out and he drops down not on Omek. Right away. I mean, he does turn into Omek. It's just Kevin Coe.
This is the funniest part of the entire trade of my mind where freaking Frankenstein jumps out of this freaking, you know, freaking helichopper. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the hell you call this.
Yeah, it's
an airplane helicopter.
It's like an Apache helicopter, big transport deal.
I don't know. It's a goddamn amalgam of something. There is a proper name. I cannot think of it. But he just drops out of this over a city and just lands like he's coming right down on Kevin Coe.
Sword going.
Kevin. Kevin Coe looks up. He shits his pants. Holy crap, I'm activated.
Yeah, and that's what I was like, this is weird where they had to have Frankenstein drop in on him with the sword, you know, fired up. He's ready. And then I thought, and then by the end, when you do find out what happened, I thought, okay, I get it. It's not that they just wanted to get Kevin Coe or Omek. They really wanted him to Omektivate to set this whole thing up and to get Brother up. Oh, it's crazy. And really, there's not a lot to this issue. They go back and forth. They're fighting.
It's like any of these issues in this Frankenstein trade where you have a lot of fighting to get to
there's
where
a lot of fighting,
the issue is.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fighting. And again, this is why by the end of this fight, I'm thinking to myself, like, why do I need to see the other side of this? Not much happens. I mean, there's trash talking going on. And they just go. And at one point, you have like the combo of – Frankenstein yelling for father, Father Time, and Omek yelling for brother, and they just keep going. And at one point, even Shadeneck gets shut down, so he's left. He couldn't find the weakness, so it's just a brawl. They just have a brawl, and
the
really
thing is, it's funny things. I actually, when we were talking about that, they're like, you know, before you plunge into this issue, I thought it was laughable because I'm not about to go to Omek. Us just talking about it, I kind of want to go see what the other half.
Yeah, maybe like something more. But the whole thing, I just have a feeling that the other side of the battle is what Kevin was doing leading up to Frankenstein falling on him. But yeah, I the whole thing is extended, and the way they extend it is that he can't get a hold of Shadeneck, so he can't get any sort of weaknesses on Omek, so he just starts beating him up or trying to beat him up. So really, there's not much to it. By the end of it, though, like we said, the Brother Eye technology does activate and then kind of attacks the Shade. It attacks Shadeneck. It goes into Shadeneck, and they say, you know, this Brother Eye seems to be in direct contact with Omek at all times, but he's also made it into our Shadeneck systems. And as this is going on, it's trying to go, this is a trap that Father Time had set. And it's, you know, you have Ray Palmer there.
That's the funniest part. Inside of a freaking, you know, a network kind of thing, inside the Shade Hub, you know, it's Ray Palmer's just standing there. He's shrunk down. Always bugged me how he goes through freaking, like, you know, like telephone lines back then. I guess this would be freaking fiber optic
cable.
It's kind
of like that, yes.
I don't know, because in my mind it would still be wireless.
Yeah, it's almost like he's in the net. At this point, in their computer system.
And it's great, too, because it's not only Ray Palmer, it's also his nanopires.
Yeah, his so ridiculous. But as this is going on, they have set up kind of a firewall, so they think that Brother Eye can't get in. So while he is attempting to do this, Ray Palmer is copying what Brother Eye is and sending it to Father Time. That's basically, they're trying to just copy. Yeah, so crazy. So then, even at the point where it looks like they've downloaded everything with Brother Eye, you have Father Time, like, looking at a screen. Gotcha, you sneaky bastard. And then as this is going, it's not like the fight is completely over. And that's where Father Eye's like, okay, Frank, security issue resolved. Why don't you finish this clown off and come home? And Frankenstein is about to pretty much, looks like he's going to decapitate Omek.
Well,
and
I don't know, because he's lifting his arm up, so like for some reason it really seems like he's going to just cut that arm off.
I don't know.
Off,
I'm telling you.
At one point, when he then, like, you know, Omek teleports away.
Yeah, he teleports away,
causing Frank to lose his arm because it takes his arm with him.
Yep, Frankenstein loses his arm, so he doesn't have an arm. He heads back to the farm, and where they have this now is you have Dr. Mazursky, who is, you know, doing experiments to get a new arm. They have a new arm kind of growing there. They're going to do it. And she even mentions, it's a cool deal. She's like, you know what? Your ability to accept new parts is beyond compare. I mean, it's uncanny. It's great. She mentions Dr. Frankenstein, says, man, his work was so great.
Even playing into, like, kind of what we're dealing with metal now, even though the nth metal has kind of been fundamentally changed for all that story we're dealing with. You know, when we did the Futures End bit, Frankenstein was in that, and like at the one point he had his arm cut off, and they thought they had, like, you know, there was a dead Hawkman there, so they used Hawkman and put it back on Frankenstein, and then the nth metal actually, like, reacted with the Frankenstein's body, making him alive again for the first time.
And
it was really cool just to see how his body reacted to these different things. Like, right now we have this arm that's going to be, you know, just accepted through his body, like the nth metal arm. Like, if for some reason that was one of my favorite parts.
And it's pretty cool. Yeah, and it's pretty cool here just to show, hey, look, he can lose an arm. And he does lose his arm a lot.
He always
loses it. But she even says, and what the kind of a seed planted here is her saying, you know what, with enough time and study, I could probably find out what each body part, who they were, and you know, get you an idea of really what makes you up. And this goes with, this is where, I'll tell you, when we get to our score at the end, even besides that, put all that aside of what the actual thing is, this is a book where you have Frankenstein, which is, you can make a similarity to Cyborg. And the whole thing with, like, the Frankenstein, am I more man or monster? You have that whole thing. I think that Jeff Lemire played it off so much better. You don't have to just deal with
it's
that.
Because it's underplayed.
Yes, that's, and
it,
this
it's
is,
actually,
yes.
It's nice to see, because, you know, you don't deal with that solely. Like, Cyborg, he never gets away from that guy.
No, they never get away
with it. Frankenstein, he's got other shit to worry about.
Oh, he's got a ton, but he even says, you know what? I may actually be able to determine who I was before this. And she's like, yeah. And he just kind of goes with that. And he thinks, you know, you're getting, okay, he might be interested in that. Because we also get more, like you said, more of him than just the, am I man or monster, or, you know, that stuff. And this is where you kind of get the beginnings of a little bit of a romance. When Nina's like, well, and it's Nina Mazursky.
I want to put it like this, because even though it was like, you know, heavily freaking dived into and the Nightwing series, yes, freaking, you know, Dick Grayson's connection to the circus. Now imagine if you got Dick Grayson, you know, agent of Spiral, which you just had the Grayson book where you want to see Grayson as this freaking spy, and then the whole time was, I used to be an acrobat.
He just talked
about the circus the entire time. That would be over the top, but you know it's there. But we're dealing with this now.
Yeah, no, I really like
Agent of Shade. Now Frankenstein, man or monster.
Yeah, yeah, that's, and I like it. I like the way he does it. He does it subtly, and he sets up something here. But yeah, like I said, he sets up something else because he's like, listen, Dr. Mazursky, you know, that would be pretty cool. And then she's like, listen, please call me Nina. And you see Frankenstein looks scared. Ooh, what's this fish woman doing? Because she puts her hand on him. And it is the start of kind of a romance between them.
I'm pretty sure it goes full out into the romance in the series. But
it does.
I don't know where it ended. If they split
I don't think,
up,
I don't know either.
See it, you never see Nina again.
No, and that's the problem is I actually never finished the series. I only got to. Yeah, and I think, but he still pines for his wife, but his wife throughout this is going to make it very clear that she doesn't want him back, and continuing into Rebirth even. But yeah, you have this whole thing, and they're like, hey, let's get going. And this is when Frankenstein realizes that he was played. And he's like, listen, you know what? You were after Brother Eye all along. You used me. And Father Time just says, fuck it. Yeah, you're right. And you know what? That's what I do. You shut your mouth.
Ain't got shit on me, kid.
You shut your mouth. And it's funny, too, because in this, this is just me in my mind. You get the idea because of it's Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But I also get this weird idea going into this, and I think it's been intuned or ingrained in me from a lot of books like a Suicide Squad or a JLA, that for some reason Frankenstein has to remain on the team. And I never really think of it until he says, you know what? When I'm done here, I'm out. I'm out. I don't. You do this again, I'm done.
He talks about it all the time about leaving Shade. Yeah, so, you know, it's always like a threat. He's always 2 weeks till retirement.
Oh, yeah, he is. But it's weird because I think that they never fully stressed. I know it is Agent of Shade.
Yeah.
But a lot of times in these books, there is a reason. Even like a JLA with Lobo. Like, yeah, Lobo, I'm going to leave when I'm done. There's no real reason we get that Frankenstein really is that much in there. Except what else is he going to do?
I was making the comparison in the beginning of this trade about the BPRD from freaking Hellboy and shit like that. They stayed at that place because they were freaks and monsters. They had
nowhere else to go. Yeah, and that's what I get. I get that idea of this. But Frankenstein seems to be
He's a man of the world.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, yeah, I could see him just leaving here right now and going and hitchhiking.
I just imagine, though, it's like Father Time, like, yeah, I played you soccer. Where are you going to go, ugly? Like,
yeah,
no,
really?
I'm going to go, Father. I was just accepting a freaking the place.
Yeah, I'm going to Tibet.
They're willing to take me.
I'm going there to Tibet. Now, you get the idea that possibly he may not be able to just walk out with everything he knows. I mean, there is a little bit there. But still, when he says, like, you know what? My only mission is to protect humanity from these things they themselves cannot bear to face. I will not be your pawn if this happens again. You can find yourself a new agent. And I was like, ooh, I didn't really get the idea that he would ever leave or be able to. But yeah, it seems. And then he gets back to his, you know, his gentlemanly ways and says to Mazursky, good day, m'lady. And you can find me in my domicile. You know, all that stuff. Yeah. So he goes off. And it's pretty good. But yeah, the seeds are planted in that with
now that
the whole OMAC
Brother
team.
Eye and freaking sent him to the Ant Farms for analysis.
Yep.
The seeds have been planted with that as well as we move on to the next one.
And it's funny.
We go back to see more of the humanoids and how they're freaking made and
remade. And you know there is trouble quick. Once you start seeing how many there are. Oh, yeah, I know. But they kind of got away from them for a little. And then all of a sudden they are pushed on. You're like, yeah, shit's going to go terribly wrong very quick here. Yeah, you knew if you had. And what they have is pretty much a rotating population of 8,575 or 76. No matter what, whenever you go. Because they only last 24 hours, I believe. Yeah, 24 hours. And then they become waste product. And then they've actually figured out a way to kind of
dump back into a vat before they disintegrate.
Which makes a new one.
Be used to remake new ones.
Yeah, at first they were were used for fuel, but now they actually recycle. So they have all of these humanoids that, and that they really have stressed, like in this first scene where you have Mazursky and Ray Palmer talking, and Ray's like, and it's funny, he's like, listen, I know this isn't going to sound very scientific. These guys creep me out. Yep. They give me the creeps, but they really push, like, they can't think. They don't know. They don't. Well, all of a sudden you see that as they are kind of dying, being regenerated, whatever, you have them in line walking. One kind of starts looking around.
I love that freaking scene though, because you have them on conveyor belts just being led to the freaking vat where they're just gonna be freaking, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, turned back to liquid and shit like that. And as they freaking walk past right after Ray says the whole bit, like, you know, they kind of freak me out. It's like the one is like, what's going on?
Yeah. It's kind of, he comes to and kind of starts looking around and says, like, what am I? Why am I? And then just takes off running. Yeah, just takes off running. Must run, hide, learn. And you're like, okay, shit is about to. It never works out with things like this. I don't know why anybody ever tries to do it. But really, if the technology continues in our real life, this will happen and somebody will die and many people will. I'm telling you.
I saw I Am Robot, man. I saw
Jurassic Park. It doesn't matter if they're humans, whatever it is. It's never going to work out. Never. I want to see that movie where... I want to see that movie where they make, like, these humanoids, and it works out fine. It's case closed. It's actually a very quick movie. There is no middle section.
It's very boring. Nothing happens for 3 hours.
There's no conflict at all. Everybody's happy. It's like, you know, freaking the Jetsons. I don't see any uprising in that, Eric. But then we go off to Vietnam. And that's where Frankenstein and the Creature Commandos are going down the river. And they're, you know, you have some little bits of dialogue between Griffith and Velcoro. And it's okay. Kallus is there. But they are there to find who, Eric?
Colonel Quantum, who was back in Vietnam with Frankenstein. They're like, They came in pretty much single-handed. It's a scene that's very reminiscent of Watchmen.
It is very Watchmen-esque. Comedian,
because you have Colonel Quantum here, who is essentially Dr. Manhattan, except for he's red and gross-looking. And, you know, it's even funny because when we had the energy spikes that led to the to Vietnam, they originally thought it was Captain Atom.
Yeah, but it is. It's Dr. Quantum.
After all this time, you know, freaking Colonel Quantum got tired of the killing and just freaking left. And, like, nobody knew where he was. People thought he had died or anything because there hasn't been any, like, energy signatures from him. And there's been no word since the Vietnam War. So,
this is a pretty cool thing because Frankenstein does mention, hey, listen, I know everybody's heard, you know, recently we've had these superheroes pop up, Superman and the rest of those guys. Yeah. But you know what? Before then, there was shit going down, and I was part of it. And we did have, you know, pretty much showing that there was metahumans before, but they were kept under wraps, and they had sent them to Vietnam to kind of stop the war
That's
there.
That's one of the things, you know, when we had that Captain Atom 6-issue, meaning the Fall and Rise of Captain Atom, and he went back in time to the 90s before there were any superheroes, just because of his, like, you know, his knowledge of the military and shit like this. I just wish they would have talked a little bit more about Captain Quantum. I mean, Colonel Quantum.
Yeah, Colonel Quantum.
It's Quantum.
And he's so similar to himself. So you would think.
Exactly. It seems like that technology might have been the thing that led to freaking become Captain Atom.
And like you said, it is kind of funny because when they do get – because basically Quantum went off. He met with Frankenstein the one time. They were in like a bar in Vietnam and basically
again,
just said, I'm
of
yeah
a freaking Dr. Manhattan.
Yep, it is. And he said basically, like, listen, I'm leaving. I'm gonna stop fighting.
Killing freaking Vietnamese women who are pregnant.
Yes. And he's like, I'm done fighting. This war doesn't mean anything. Nobody's gonna win. And just walked off into the jungle. Yeah. And then you have the whole thing, which also I like because it also shows you that we know that Father Time and Frankenstein did have a relationship leading up to this, because even when he showed up and, oh my God, what happened to you when he had a new body? But this shows that it has been a long running relationship, because he even says that when Quantum went off into the jungle, him, Frankenstein, and Father Time thought that he was wrong, thought that Quantum was wrong, that we could win this war, we could do this, but then even says, I never saw him again, and later both Father Time and I would come to realize that Quantum was right. The war was madness, and our decision to intervene was wrong. But he had pretty much laid low. But recently, they did have a huge explosion that looks very, you know, what's it called, Captain Atom / Dr. Manhattan-esque, and ended up just destroying every village within 50 miles, something like that. And that's why they were sent there pretty much
to go back and recover what we left behind.
Yeah, they were told to go and assassinate him. In the meantime, back at Shade headquarters, you do see Lady Frankenstein just basically bitching and moaning because she doesn't have anything to do. And what we saw at the beginning, all you can keep telling her is to just shut your mouth. You're going to get your wish.
Don't worry. Something's going to happen.
Yep. So Frankenstein goes, they go to where all the signatures are coming from. And Frankenstein goes in and sees his old pal, Quantum, who is it's a monstrosity. He's a monster.
It's weird because he is this, you know, this nuclear man to a degree, you know, this radiation monster.
Yeah, and now it's just destroyed.
And now it's just like he is covered in tumors all over his body. And like he is just a disfigured animal man. I mean, elephant man looking man.
Yeah, he is. And he has a whole – and even – I'm telling you, even the whole thing where he's there and this little butterfly lands on his – you know, flies by and lands on his hand. To me, I'm like – boy, that's like something that would have been Watchmen too. It's so Watchmen-esque to me. But yeah, he says like he's pissed. He's angry right now and just upset because he's a monster.
I just imagine
he can't
for some
die.
Reason with the freaking like the how the comparisons to Watchmen in this.
Yeah.
I just imagine there's Jeff Lemire writing this. This is what I think happened to Dr. Manhattan back in 2011.
Yeah, I'm telling
he's
you.
Writing this.
A little butterfly came down because that shows you, you know, nature isn't upset at Quantum. It's just man. I don't know. But you have that there. And he says, listen, can you make it stop? You got to help me. I'm a monster. I can't die. I'm going to be like this forever. And that's where Frankenstein loads up his gun with an anti-nuclear payload that Dr. Palmer, Ray Palmer, said would take care of this and would, you know, make him regress into back to his normal self. But it will kill him as well. And he says, you know, are you ready for this? Is this what you really want? And he's like, yes, this is what I want. And he's like, okay, goodbye, Dwayne. And then he shoots him. And he goes fucking ballistic.
Because he shoots, like, you know, Dwayne's on his knees crying. Freaking Frankenstein puts the gun to his head. And the next panel is we see the creature commanders outside and they hear the gunshot. When you turn the page and you see that freaking bullet just sitting on the front of his forehead and him screaming, like,
screaming.
Shit just got real. Shit just got real.
Yeah, and it looks like Big Baby out of nowhere. And then he's humongous. And then it works. It does. Yeah. It actually, he goes back and then he is just a naked man. He's a naked Dwayne. And that's when he says, you know, it worked.
Thanks,
thank
Frank.
You, Frank. They hold hands. And then the butterfly lands him. And again, Eric, it's the circle of life. It is.
Is that what that is?
I don't know. I don't know what the butterfly keeps doing. I think that butterfly would have been fucking dead. That can't be the same one. But yeah, you go back to the zoo, the Shade headquarters, and actually the zoo inside of the farm. If you remember, that is where Dr. Mazursky had put her, you know, the original creature commandos that did not really work out. And that's where you see the humanids have gone there. They actually all appear to be sentient, and they've decided that they need a distraction. They're going to take over the farm, but what they're going to do is distract everyone in there right now by opening up the zoo with all of these creatures, and they do that, and they come out. There's, the alarm goes.
I don't know if it's ever explained, but that main human is that first gained sentience.
Yeah.
Why is he not disintegrating?
I don't know, and it's weird because they even call it out later, like, yeah, we don't have to fucking worry about you. You're all going to die. And when they do say that, you see Father Time says that, and then the humanids say, well, you know, we've taken the whole process over, and somehow we regain or retain all the information that our disintegrated brethren have.
It becomes like that freaking, you know, eating.
It's a hive mind.
Gain their freaking memory.
Yeah, all it is a big hive mind that seems to be, you know, going on. Well, as this is going on, Lady Frankenstein's just like, all right, action. I'm going to take care of this. Father Time wants to call, Frankenstein the creature commandos. She wants no parts of that, so we can take care of this. And just hands a gun to Dr. Mazursky, which is just like, we're going to take care of it. And they do go off to fight. And as they go through the farm, you just see all the dead security guards and everything going down. And finally, they do run into a big, you know, glob monstrosity.
Hello,
and a bunch
mommy.
Of guys. And it's the hello, mommy. And it's – I like this. I actually – this part, these last two issues that end up being this, you know, trade, I really like. The problem is we've already seen this hello mommy from those on Monster World. And it really, I'm like, is this all she's good at, being a mother figure to every monstrosity that comes about?
Somebody,
but I do like
to have one thing, Jim. She's asking to be a mommy.
That's what she has. And we go to the last bit of the trade, which would have been issue 7. And I do want to point out again, you mentioned it before, the covers of this whole series are incredible. They're
good. The first one is a little mediocre, but once it starts getting going, they have this whole painted style and they look fantastic.
Oh my God, this last one is Rise of the Humanids, and it looks fucking awesome. But also I wanted to point out, because I said to you, I was doing this, we're reading the issues, and I get to this last one, and I'm like, huh, you know what, this is weird, this art looks a lot different, and I really like it, and it ends up, the artist didn't change, Alberto Ponticelli is still on art, the issue that happened was they actually got an inker involved, and yeah, and I'm telling you, this is head and shoulders, the best looking bit of this, and really looks great. I like the art as it was. It used to look, to me, at the beginning, Monster World, it fit. It was more of a, I even said it earlier, a horror style of art. This is just really good art, and with the same guy. But yeah, they are actually getting attacked.
Well, even if we talk about that, you know, it did have a very like rough style to begin with, which you really like take with the whole horror aspect of it. But as each issue progressed, I think
it got a little better. You think?
And got more superhero-y.
But this issue was very superhero-y. Yeah. Even just like even the individuals like Ray Palmer and all the stuff, and I really like it. But as this is going on, you have the what they call the original Creature Commandos. This is that group that they ended up, you know, saying they're not going to be able to work out.
Nina's
failed experiments. But yeah, they basically, this big glob monster ends up just going and in pretty much almost like a Clayface type of enveloping himself around Lady Frankenstein. And then Nina just starts to fire and they just knock her out. And this invisible guy, he's the guy who does the most damage. His move is just to sneak up behind you and either punch you or stab you. But then they realize.
One of the things too, because when I first saw him too, I thought that was that main yellow humid because they're very similar.
Yeah, I did too.
Much featureless, and they're just yellow and they have a fucking form and that's it. I'm like, yeah, I did not realize that was another freaking Creature Commandos.
And I don't know if you'll agree if you're reading, not that many people are besides you, Eric, but if you're reading the Blue Beetle book in Rebirth, I think that these original Creature Commandos remind me of something that you would see in Blue Beetle. It kind of reminds me of a Scott Collins type art that we saw.
All of a sudden, it's very like these are the posse members that we saw.
That's what it looks like. It looks like the one with the spikes looks like it's somebody from the posse. And that's what
a bandana on that person. It's, and a freaking, you know, a denim vest. These are the she's in the posse right there.
It's the posse. But yeah, as this is going on, they're just trying to figure out what's happening and they can't do anything. And it's funny because they really don't know exactly what all is going on because they are only dealing with the people, this group escaping from the zoo. So the humanids have kind of their plan has come to fruition here of what they really wanted to do. And that's where you have them say like, hey, I it's Ray says, anybody notice there aren't any humanids around right now? And you're like, yeah, that's because shit's gone down. Now they do have a weird deal where before it seemed like the Creature Commandos could teleport instantaneously from everywhere. This, they did say, oh, you know what? They're in Vietnam. It's going to take them a little while. And I thought that was a little bit forced in. But they do arrive, and the front door, the gateway into ShadeNet, is closed. And I don't know how these things work either.
No, how it's the biggest. His voice his voice command is being overridden. He just says, fuck it. I hate technology and busts
and
the door
down to get
in. And just
breaks it down. Yeah. I just – every other time it seemed like they would teleport directly into the control center.
The hub,
the hub. So it's a little off. But maybe that's something they diverted as well. It's too much.
You can't trust anything when humanoids are involved.
You don't have to think about it, though. But when they open it up, you're basically Han Solo in the extended edition where it's all – you hate that scene, but when Han goes around the corner and there's the thousands of stormtroopers. But it's funny too because at this point I think of the same thing that I did then is you have the first row of about 8. Everybody behind them is just going to shoot the guy in front of them. You're not going to be able to shoot. There are guys 7 rows back. They ain't shooting anybody. They're just standing behind humanoids who basically, to me, have to be the same size, right? You don't have the tall guys in the back. They are made exactly alike. But, yeah, they're there, and that's where you realize that they, Father Time and Ray realize that Brother Eye has infected them.
Brother Eye. Yep, looks like Brother he left Eye. Behind a little parting gift, and we tried to infiltrate our shed. ShadeNet systems a few weeks back.
Yep, and that all of you, you know, you have almost like a trash-talking computer deal, because they go on the computer and it says, like, humanoid control module, current humanoid population, error. Current humanoid status, error. And then a big brother eye symbol under it. I mean, that's talking some shade to shade, Eric. But then they bust through the door, and you have that original guy who, like you said, seems like, I guess 24 hours may not have passed, but he should be going soon.
He was already on the conveyor belt.
I know.
Freaking, you know, changed their mind.
I know.
Like, his time was running out. Like, we saw people on those conveyor belts about to get put in those vents. Yeah. They were falling apart.
Yep, and he says the humanid revolution has begun. We're going to take over Shade City.
It turns out all I had to do was realize I was, like, you know, a thing, and I could pull myself together.
Yep, he says the revolution's on. We're taking over Shade headquarters. Father Time says it's unacceptable. What are you going to achieve? You're going to all decompose within 24 hours. And then they're like, no. We're no longer your mindless servants. Brother Eye has shown us a new life, a new awareness. And then it goes through that whole thing about how, you know, their bodies will be restored. They have this hive mind, all this. And then say, you're going to leave. If you don't leave, you're going to be executed. You know, all. And it's funny because it's any flesh being, but because of Bender and all, I kept seeing flesh bags. That's all I kept seeing. And I'm like, okay. But yeah, basically you have Father Time then.
Well, that's
Eric.
The thing is, as one body dies, our human and hive mind is transferred to the next. Yeah. I'm like, well, you know, main guy here, you might want to get to a new goddamn body soon. You're already freaking slopping all over the floor.
Yeah, he's slopping around. But to him, it's every, you know, they're socialists, Eric. Everything for the power of the group. But yeah, Father Time's like, you know what? We don't negotiate with terrorists. Yeah. Like, it's funny because it's like supposed to be a little bit of a trash talking line. First off, the art in that panel looks like Father Time scared shitless. But also, you're getting a trash talk from a little Asian schoolgirl. It's never going to hit as hard. But it makes me laugh. But yeah, then that's where she starts talking to, you know, Frankenstein and all, and saying, you know, we've been seized in the hub. Lady Frankenstein and Nina have been captured by Monster Fugitive, and I'm in a really bad mood. And says, take him out. Take him out with extreme prejudice. And he's like, okay, with extreme pleasure, Father. And I don't know, in this issue, the way the art changed, how much I like the art in this, I really like that floating head of Father Time when talking. It just looks good. But now we're just going to have a straight-up battle. And they just start going to town.
As we always do.
Yes, that's what it always ends up in these. And this is like one of those where they can go with extreme prejudice, because these are not living things.
It really is. It's like, all right, we're going to have Frankenstein, we're going to have the Creature Commandos, and we're going to have a horde of an infinite amount of enemies that they're going to have to get through to get to their destination.
Yeah. Yeah, and these, it's weird though, because it's one of those where they are humanids, but they are sentient now, so it is kind of sad that
They picked a side, they picked the wrong side, all right?
That is true, and that's where we do go back. Well, they figure, listen, we need some bigger weapons. We're going to fight all of these, you know, 8,000 some of these. We need bigger weapons, and they go. They're like, oh, we're going to go down to the armory. In the meantime, you do go to the original Creature Commandos, who are there with Dr. Mazursky, and, you know, trying to talk to her about it, but it really – it's nothing, because they're like, oh, you know, you were a mother, you abandoned us. Okay, and she doesn't even get into it, because really at the beginning, she ended up abandoning them because she wanted to keep them alive. They were going to kill them, and she convinced them to have this little zoo.
No, we're going to make this zoo. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and also at some point, I kind of thought that Father Time was not aware of the zoo. I thought that Ray kind of made it, snuck it around, but I guess you can't keep secrets.
I don't think there's much
you can't keep secrets from him. It seemed like played out that way that nobody knew about it. But as they're talking, they pretty much are going to kill Mazursky, and then Lady Frankenstein just comes through and just starts blasting. So
that's the best
that.
Part, too, because she kills that big clay face like a motherfucker first by blowing his head, like, through his chest, and it looks like he just slaps him like, you were just a sloppy mess to begin with. How is this killing you?
Yeah, and that's what happens. But, you know, everything is really pushing towards the end of this thing, this volume now, because as you go, you have the real Creature Commandos in the armory, which is kind of a cinematic thing. Would have been a kind of a funny little deal as they get these crazy weapons and just go.
Oh, it's funny to me, too, just because of the weapons and the freaking
That's what I'm saying,
Shade armory is funny to me because, like, you know, Vincent, he gets a freaking gun that shoots
mini
buzzsaws.
Mini buzzsaws.
And freaking, you know, What the hell? Griffith.
Griffith.
He has a sword that's called the Exploding Sword. It explodes anything if it freaking comes in contact with him.
And it's funny, too. Even when he gets it, he's like, huh, I think I'm going to try this thing. It's called the Exploding Sword. And then Vincent's like, what does it do? I don't know, but it sounds cool. It is a pretty – and really, of all of this, I love Frankenstein. I always have loved him as a character in the DC comics. Vincent and Griffith, to me, are great. They are so good together. And it goes on because as they go on –
don't get used to it, Jim, because they ain't going to be together very much.
As they go, though, in this fight, they end up just – they're talking trash talk and making fun of each other for the trash talk. It's funny. But as this goes on, and even at the point, you have Griffith says, you know what? We actually do make a pretty good team. And Vince is like, Joko getting all sentimental on me, Bigfoot. You're going to make me cry. And then they go off. But this is where you have Jeff Lemire kind of maybe giving people what they were asking for. We did not have a site at the beginning of the New 52. At this point, this, 7 months into the New 52, we were not even reading it yet. So I do not know. But I'm sure that people who were reading it at the time that it came out probably were kind of saying, maybe in reviews. I didn't read all the reviews saying, you know what? You have Ray Palmer. We want the Atom. Where's the Atom? We have Ray Palmer winning. And this is where.
I don't think anybody was yelling for that. Honestly.
Maybe not. But Jeff Lemire was keeping that, up his sleeve because he does come out here as they are getting attacked by, Father Time and him are getting attacked in the hub.
By the Humanids.
Yeah, by the Humanids. He ends up going all Atom on him and going around, and you see him going and breaking pretty much. Decapitating everyone and destroying their heads.
It really reminds me of that 3D Sonic move where you freaking, you tap it over and over again.
Yeah, it does.
Once you're in a combo
mode. It's like that.
He just goes through as a tiny Ray Palmer and blows up all of their heads.
Yeah, and with this, then you have Father Tim like, nice one, Doc. Maybe we need to get you a costume. And then he's like, nah, not my style. Now, I do want to point out that later in the Batman Superman book, I believe it's issue 10, which Jeff Lemire wrote as well, the Atom ended up getting his costume. That was when he got his costume in that for a one-shot story, which was pretty cool that I actually really liked.
It was a fantastic journey for
him. It was a fantastic journey where Superman and him went – I believe it was Superman and him went into the body of Batman, which was crazy. But we go back to the fight. You do have the Creature Commandos
and
going.
And I'm telling you, this line, getting back to the fight with Vincent and Griffith, it's the best. Freaking deal. Like I just said, Vincent has a goddamn gun that shoots mini buzzsaws. So as he is shooting these humanoids – he has to make some catchphrases. Time for you to buzz off.
Buzz off. And it does remind me, if you're reading Harley, of Red Tool. But yeah, it's so good. And then you have Griffiths like, you're so lame. And they're going, and I like it. Now, I will tell you throughout this, we haven't really even spelled it out. We did at the beginning. You do still continue to get these little narrations of ShadeNet and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
By this point.
It does calm down a bit. But
by this point, though, I had had enough.
A lot.
Yeah, and I had had enough. Because every time, it's just to catch new readers up every single time. And it was driving me nuts. But yeah, you do get those. But yeah, you have all this. They're going to town and hitting it. And they're wondering what's going on. But Frankenstein and Callus then are off to try to find, Lady Frankenstein and Dr. Mergersky, Nina, and they're just going through bodies, and then they get attacked as well. But then it really doesn't come to anything, because that's all it is just Lady Frankenstein and Dr. Mergersky coming out and like, hey, took you long enough.
She's about to fall out of her goddamn leather deal.
Yeah, really. She looks hot. But yeah, and they even had that one spiked monster came out, and Frankenstein's like, gets his blade knocked out on the floor, and that's when Lady Frankenstein comes with the head of the one guy and then goes and just basically shoots the head of the other. And then they're just sitting there as that, all of them, and like, huh? And you see the freaking sword, Frankenstein's sword, gets lifted up. And I'll tell you, it's not the greatest of art here because there's no
background. And when I first saw it, had no idea anything was wrong.
It looks like it's just laying there.
Yep,
it's just a clear white background. It looks like it's still laying on the floor, but in fact, it's kind of levitating up. And this, the Invisible Man comes and just cuts off Callus's head. And he goes, and that's where it was funny too, because he cuts it off, and I still didn't realize that he was using Frankenstein's sword. I actually was like, and then he's like, listen, you invisible fiend, your vile hands are not fit for the sword of the archangel. And when he said that, I thought that what he was saying then was that he wasn't going to kill him with the sword. He was going to strangle him. And then I'm like, I get it.
Because even when you look at the sword in that, that white background,
yeah.
And when the freaking the Invisible Man is holding it, it does not look
like it.
It's a lot smaller, especially the freaking hilt. It is like so, there's so much smaller. It's not wide as the other one. I'm telling you, this looks big in Frankenstein's hand. This little skinny goddamn.
Yeah, and it's just this little sword.
It looks right in his hand. So
I'm telling you, it threw me off. And then trying to gather what was happening after he grabs the Invisible Fiend by the neck, I really did think then that it was him saying that he was not even worthy to die by a sword. He was going to choke him out, which he does. He snaps his neck and chokes him out. But then I realized.
Like I'm telling you, he freaking twists his neck till like there's nothing left.
Yeah, there's nothing.
It seems like.
Yeah, it'd be like if this was Stretch Armstrong and you grabbed his head, like it would just be nothing there. But yeah, they crunch it. And that's where Nina goes and grabs. And also, with great timing, the Vincent Griffith shows up around the corner. They go, you have Ray Palmer and Father Time, you know, their little heads pop up. And that's where Nina's like, we need to get Callus to my lab. He's still alive. And you get the idea then that
him,
that's what I'm saying. You get the idea that he is going to still be alive no matter what, that it's just his head.
The worst part is, though, because, you know, I did read all of this, but now since it's the last issue, I don't remember what happened to Callus at all.
And it's funny, too, because as this, you even get the whole deal where Father Time's like, hey, by the way, Ray Palmer's really kick-ass. He's going, but it all ends with them running to the hub and them saying they have the one guy like, oh my god, I'm sorry, I had no choice, they're gonna kill me, oh no. And that's where Frankenstein's, what's he talking about, Father Time? What got out? You know, what is this big thing that got out? And Father Time now looks petrified and says, Frank, there was a fifth prisoner in the zoo, one so dangerous and secret we didn't even keep Shade Net files on him, and now he's escaped Shade City. And Frankenstein's like, you know who, Father? What the hell did you have trapped in that thing? And it was him, Frank. It was your son. And they're God. And I like it that it's little teeny Father Time pointing at both, you know, Lady Frankenstein and Frank. It was your son. And yeah, you have the whole deal. Next, the search for the spawn of Frankenstein. And if you were reading in Rebirth, if a lot of people who do listen to us joined in on Rebirth, where you did have mention of the son that they are talking about and going to get in that Superman little, you know, two-shot deal that they were in. And this is a big deal. And again, the son of Frankenstein and Lady Frankenstein was in the zoo for a reason. Yeah, it's an abomination. It's bad. And yeah, that's what it's going to go. But that ends the volume one. That ends the volume one Monster World, which is a weird way to spell it out.
You, I would not have gone Monster World for this first trip.
I wouldn't have either.
The least amount of anything we're dealing with.
I probably would have just, I don't know. I would have had something just to do with Frankenstein, you know, or, you know, I don't know. I don't, Monster Squad, Eric, maybe?
Ooh.
How about that? Actually,
you could just call it Creature Commandos.
Yeah, that's all you needed. That would have probably been what I'd call it, like Creature Commandos redo or something. I don't know. But what did you think of it? What would you give it as a whole?
Well, that's the thing, is when I read it years ago, I found myself really enjoying it just because I'm a monster fan. The whole idea of the Creature Commandos and Frankenstein, Lady Frankenstein, it was just a lot of fun. Even when you get the ant farm, as ridiculous as it is still fun, even though once again, really crazy, what's the Shade.net narration and shit like that. Going back again, I did not have as much a good time, but I don't know. I think it was mostly that Monster World shit.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It was not as much fun. Once we get past that and get to the rest of the trade, it becomes a lot more fun. The characters seem more comfortable. You seem more comfortable with them. And the whole humanoid thing, which you like, if you saw that in the first issue where these whole
you knew it was coming.
You knew some shit was going to go bad. And having the whole crossover with it being Brother Eye, that was fun as well. So honestly, I was a bit lower when I first thought about what I was going to give this. But after talking about it and, you know, reminiscing about what Frankenstein meant to us back in the day.
Yeah.
I think I have to go with 6.5 out of 10.
Oh,
just
you
because
son of a bitch.
I'm not a huge fan of the art. Like I said, you like the art more than I am. But
yeah, I do.
It is a fun story just to jump into and, you know, take it for what it is. You know, don't expect too much going in and you can have a really good time with it.
Yeah, now my whole deal going into this after reading it, this was one of the first two books and series I read. And we did have kind of that benefit. It's not a benefit per se, but it is. We ended up going into the New 52 a couple years in, and so we could – pretty much what we did, you know, marathon it. So when I read Frankenstein,
I think it was first, like, I think it had 15 issues out by the time I started reading.
Yeah, I think I read, and I think I stopped, but I read up to the zero issue.
Right.
And that's when Matt Kent jumped on. A lot of things changed then, but I did read all that. And that and Aquaman were two of the first books that I read. And I thought that they were the greatest things ever. Now, reading it again, I do realize, and some people who just jumped on with Rebirth, I think will be able to understand, because now, you know, we're a year or so past. It's not as much, but the whole concept was these were the books that I first started. And I think that the books you first start with, you're amazed by them. I
not
did
me,
read
because I started with Savage Hawkman, and
no.
I still think it's
no.
Garbage.
I'm saying, but you had already read comics. I never read
you
comics.
Comics in general.
Yeah, this
all
is
right.
What I'm saying. These were my first comics. So seeing a book where Frankenstein was going around killing people, and this was a Frankenstein that was a proper gentleman, and things like that, and even having even the Shade Tech, you know, the farm, and the Ray Palmer, who then I realized, oh my God, that's the Atom, who I really didn't know. All this stuff was so amazing to me that, and now in Aquaman, just pointing that out, Aquaman was the opposite, where I always liked Aquaman. Yeah. I liked Aquaman in the Super Friends cartoon. That's what I was, you know, part of. I never knew he was a joke. So then when I read it and then realized, like, oh, this is a you know, this is making him legit and things like that, I loved it. But I loved Aquaman going in, so that didn't matter. But it's just the whole concept of actually finally reading a full story of a comic, it amazed me. I told you, I said a long ago, some sci-fi writer did say that you have to watch out, because pretty much the first sci-fi book that you're going to read, doesn't matter if it sucks, it's going to present you with such wondrous ideas that you're going to think it's the greatest thing ever, and it's really going to get, and
that's one of the things,
though,
like you were with that, but like when I was reading comics, since I've been reading comics most of my life,
yes.
I was a young child, and I, you know, on top of that, I was a stupid child, so yeah, I loved everything I freaking saw.
Yeah, well, this is how I was kind of at the beginning of the New 52 and us jumping into it without – and again, I want to stress that when we started reading these books, we had no idea what a podcast was, you know, or at least a comic book podcast. We had no idea what these things were. We were just reading for fun.
You were more savvy than I was.
I was. I introduced you to the world of podcasts, yeah. Eric. But even so, I only listened to video game podcasts at that point, but it just – everything was so fantastical and all the stuff that it just got me. And I think that this was a good book to jump into, because even though you said a lot of it's padded with fights, to me, being have such bad ADHD, it was always exciting. You know, even fights, I'm like, I didn't know who Olmec was when I first read it. Oh my God, this is cool, and I'd look up things. So I really, really liked it. But reading it again, I still did like it, but I can see that Monster World part at the beginning, it really was nothing. It was really three issues of nothing, really. And then you kind of got into the groove after that with that Olmec one-shot, which is odd, because usually a trade like this will get one of those one-shot type deals, which was also a crossover deal. It usually puts the brakes on things. That actually picked it up for me. I'm going to go 6-5 as well. I did really like the art. Now, I will tell you that after this stopped and, you know, ended in Father Time's like, it's your son, I do want to go and read the next trade right now, even though I ended up stopping, I said, when Matt Kent jumped on the book. And by then, we were kind of doing our thing, and we were starting to get into stuff.
This only goes to 17 issues.
Yeah, yeah. And again, that's when me and you really kind of started really buckling down and reading everything and then starting a site. So I kind of ended up, you know, though by the time we started the site, Frankenstein was already done. It was done by then. But at this point where the zero issues hit, now I'm reading Nightwing, I'm reading Batman and Robin. I was reading all the big books, and this book kind of got shoved aside by me, unfortunately. So I do want to go. So it does get you kind of fired up to continue reading, which some of these didn't. So, you know, some of these things that we're reviewing. So I think it's a positive 6.5.
It is a positive 6.5, because I couldn't tell you the last time I was really wanting to look forward to reading the next trade after we got done one of these.
We're hitting some stinkers there, my friend. But yeah, and I looked on Comic Book Roundup, and during the time when it was being reviewed, the aggregate score for these seven issues of the, you know, first volume was a 7.5, which is some of the better scores than we'd had since we started this review podcast as well. And yeah. If you just went with the last three issues now of the trade, the 5, 6, and 7, that was an average of an 8. It was solid 8s through that, but as we see with a lot of books, a lot of people had bailed on reviewing it. It was only a couple reviews, so you right. usually get the people who continued liking it. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. But, Eric, that's the end of this episode. I'm going to tell you what the next one is, because I was talking to you for weeks now, and I lied to you because I thought it was something else. Yes, well, yeah. Like when I say, man, you look good today. Complete and utter lies. The next episode's Static Shock Volume 1, Supercharged. Eric, and that
the thing is, the only thing I have read of Static Shock, I read the last issue.
Which was by which was what's
Mark
his
Bernardin.
Name? Yeah, Mark Bernard did it. The original, I think it's McDaniels who wrote it. I think it might be Scott McDaniels who actually wrote and did the art and co-wrote. I believe that's who it is. I'm saying that, and I'm probably completely wrong.
It sounds right to me, honestly.
Yeah, that's who I believe it is. But, yeah, we're going to do that. It's the entire series. I believe it's 8 issues, the entire Static Shock series, so we'll see how that is. And I do want to mention after this that if you aren't already doing so, Eric, you can go to our Patreon page on patreon.com/weirdscience and support us. And if you do, you will get ahead on this podcast. You'll actually be able to get the Static Shock. Now, again, if you're already supporting the Patreon, then it's that if you are getting this in the normal feed, when this hits, you'll be able to get the Static Shock Volume 1 will already be on the Patreon, and you can get probably at that point a month ahead of the podcast. So there should probably be 2 episodes that haven't come out when you get this that you can get ahead and see what's going on. It's a weird way to spell it out because I think it was Simon who said, like, well, when I was listening to it, you say that this was available and it wasn't yet on Patreon, but if you get it on the normal feed, then you'll get the extra deal. Once you get on Patreon, you will be ahead as you can be. But yes, I don't even know if that makes sense, Eric.
I don't know
but
either.
Yeah, if you want to support us for this podcast and all the rest that we're doing and want to get a couple episodes ahead on this so you can go and listen to it right away, you can marathon them right away and then you'll be that much ahead. And I will tell you, as a little caveat of it, we're going to get through the Static Shock. Then I think the next one is the Legion of Superheroes,
which I'm
looking forward to. I don't know if it's going to be great or whatever.
Here do
but I. Then after that, you hit some heavy hitters like Suicide Squad, Batman and Robin. You have Demon Knights, like a lot of really, really good ones. So I'll be looking forward to that. But that's the end of this podcast, Eric. What do we say at the end?
That was the New 52. And now we're through.
If I could not inspire love, which was my deepest hope, I would instead cause fear.
You can feel the pain, the strain on my brain. No matter what I do, homeboy, you never change. What is life? Can't stand the pain or the struggle. No matter what I do, I seem to find trouble. Shit from my past, evil deeds that I've done. Can't correct shit with a gun. Maybe I should run, maybe I should hide. Maybe I should chill and work a 9-to-5. I put the knife away and live right another day. Looking for the silver lining, but